Presentation about unsupervised dependency parsing.
Okay, so good afternoon. I will talk about unsupervised dependency parsing, which is part of my PhD thesis. So this is the outline of my talk. First, I will introduce what is unsupervised parsing and what are the advantages and disadvantages of it, and some about the problematic evaluation of it. Then I will describe the current state of the art methods of unsupervised dependency parsing. I will describe Dan Klein's dependency model with valence. And then the second half of the talk will be my work. I will introduce the reducibility feature, which is quite useful for unsupervised dependency parsing, then my dependency model and Gibbs sampling, and some results I've achieved. So, supervised dependency parsing, you all probably know it. For supervised dependency parsing, we have some manually annotated tree bank, which is a kind of set of examples, set of example dependency trees. On this tree bank, we train the parser, and if we have some new text or new sentence, we can use this model and get a new dependency tree. So it's I would know it. Whereas the unsupervised dependency parsing, we have no manually annotated tree bank. We have only large amounts of text on which we would like to induce somehow the dependency trees. So induce based on the raw text or based on the raw text that are possible that they can be protect. So the technical. Versus 85% of supervised parsing. For English, the best unsupervised parser has about 60%, whereas the best supervised parser about 90%, I think. But the advantages are that we don't need any manually annotated tree bank, which is quite expensive and time-consuming. We can parse possibly any language in any domain, so if we get some new language and we want to parse it, we use the unsupervised parser and get some good enough trees. And we don't depend on text set or tokenization of. We use only text, we get the text and the parser and have the trees. There is some analogy with word alignment, because dependency parsing can be also seen as alignment of a sentence with itself. On this example, we align the sentence with the same sentences. The connecting word to itself is disabled, and then it is same as for alignment. We connect for each word. We find some its counterpart, which is the parent in a dependency tree, and we can attach the word to the root, which is equal to alignment to zero word in word alignment task. For word alignment, there exists the GISA++ tool, which is quite very widely used, unsupervised tool for word alignment. And why it is so widely used? Maybe because it's very easy to use. It works on any corpus. If you had parallel corpus, any parallel corpus, also any languages, we can run GISA++ on it. And if we have large enough, if the data on which it is tested are large enough, the quality is very good. So maybe the Similarly, it should work with parsing. One more thing, maybe if we would have if we had parallel corpus which is manually annotated, some larger parallel corpus, I mean, for example, 1 million of words, we should have some supervised tool for word alignment that would have better results than GitHub plus. But we don't have it, and nobody needs it. So maybe it's right enough to use unsupervised method. So why it shouldn't be used for also for parsing? Oh, that's about the metrics. If we evaluate unsupervised dependency parser, we can simply compare it with some annotated data, as we do for for the supervised parsing. The problem is that if we do some linguistic annotation, we have to make a lot of decisions how to annotate some problematic notions or problematic phenomena, like how to attach auxiliary verbs or how to attach modal verbs, whether one modal verb should be above the main verb or below the main verb, what to do with coordination structures or prepositional groups, how punctuation, everything. We have to decide, the annotators have to decide somehow to annotate it. And this is not fair for unsupervised parsing, because unsupervised parser can handle them differently, this phenomena, can decide that, for example, that auxiliary verbs will be below the main verb, and in the tree bank it is in opposite way. So it's quite discourse for the unsupervised parsers are automatically lower. At least, for example, punctuation. In PDT, we have all the punctuation, I mean, full stop, is attached to the technical root, but unsupervised parser attached to the main verb, for example, which is also correct, but we have about 5% lower score. Often there are used two metrics are used. Unlabeled attachment score, which is the standard score for the dependency parsing, and undirected, where the edge direction is disregarded. It's not a mistake if governor and dependent are switched. It's a kind of simplification, or someone used this score, but however, the most common is what unsupervised dependency parsers, what people doing unsupervised dependency parsing use, is the common attachment score. Ideally, the parsing quality should be measured not intrinsically, in this way on some application. For example, machine translation on question answering. I think that there exists some machine translation tools which use the unsupervised parsing and are quite have some very good results. So, this is the evaluation. So now I will describe some current methods which are used mainly in Stanford University. And something about history. First approaches were based on pointwise mutual information between two words in a sentence. It was before the year 2000, and these approaches have problems in being better than the simple right and left baseline. What is right baseline? Right baseline is that every word is attached to the following word, so it is like right chain. It's like a string. The left baseline is opposite, that every word is attached to the previous word. In 2005, Dan Klein introduced in his dissertation the dependency model with violence, and which was very, very important, and it is used until now in the state-of-the-art methods for unsupervised parsing. So the dependency model with valence is a generative model, and the generative story is following. For each node, it's a recursive generative story. If we first we have only the head of the sentence, and then we will generate all its left children, one after another. And when we generate all the children to the left, we generate the stop sign. Then we start generate all the children to the right, and then generate the stop sign. And this is a recursive process. So after if we generate a child, we generate all its children and go deep to the recursively to deep. So in this case, we have the VB, which is a verb, English verb. We first start generating words to the left, so we generate the noun, recursively go deeper to the noun and generate the first left child of the noun, which is a determiner. And the generative process decides that the determiner has no children to the left, so it generates the stop sign. It decides that it has no children to the right. The other stop sign to the right and go recursively back, and in this by the algorithm is generated the whole dependency trees. In dependency model, equivalence is projective. It generates only the projective trees, and yes. So in this dependency model, it has two parts or two different probabilities. Yes.
Is this sorry to interrupt, but is this a process to generate random sentences, or do you have the nodes given or?
Yes, it is a generative story. In fact, it is not generated in the algorithm. We only use some generative model, which can generate possibly any sentence, and this model is then used for maximizing the probability of the tree bank. We only want to have some model of the dependence trees, which we will somehow maximize. This concrete model is maximized by in Klein's dissertation, they used the simple EM algorithm. It's a variant which is inside-outside algorithm for dependency trees. So this is the description of the dependency model equivalence, where the probability of stop given the post tag of the head, the direction from the head, and adjacency, whether it is the first child to this direction or the other child. And P choose is the probability of generating A, which is a part of speech tag of the children, given the part of speech tag of the head and the direction. And this is the formula for probability of the subtree, which is governed by the head H. So we multiply all the, this is the generating of children. We don't stop and generate children. And after generating all the left children, we stop. And after generating all the right children, we also stop. I don't know whether it is clear, but. So it was the basic dependency model of equivalency. Then it was extended that the probability patches can be based for the generating A. We use only also the adjacency. We use a lexicalization, so we don't use only the part of speech tags, and we use also the word forms, and there are some smoothing And here's the table of the progress from 2005 to 2011. So the random baseline, it is measured on English Pantry Bank on the development data, which is World Street Journal 23. And the random baseline for English, generally non-projective trees is only 4%, left chain 21%, right chain baseline, this is only the baselines, 29% is the right chain for English. And the dependency model equivalence in 2005 had only 35% on Pantry Bank, then the extended model in 2009 42, and then it went up and this is the state-of-the-art result, and by Valentin Spitkovsky in 2011, who have 58% on Pantry Bank. With this quite simple model. So now I will switch to my experiments. I introduced the new feature into the model, which is the reducibility feature, for with which we should recognize which words are dependent or which words are. If we have a large text, we can recognize which words are leaves or which words tend to be root and like this. I will introduce the four submodels of my model, and I will describe the Gibbs sampling algorithm and how I automatically induce the dependency structures. So first, the reducibility feature. The problem is whether we can somehow recognize from text which words are dependent or which words will be leaves in a dependency tree, which words will be more heads. The definition is that a word of a segment of words, by segment of words I mean the n-gram, the word is reducible if the sentence after removing the word remains grammatically correct. A hypothesis is that reducible words or reducible sequences are leaves or subtrees in the dependency tree, which is not true for every word, but at least for adjectives and adverbs. It's true. There is some example. It's not very good. If I have a sentence like I like yellow bananas, and I want to know whether the word yellow is reducible, I remove it from the sentence and I check whether I like bananas is grammatical. I like bananas is grammatical, so the word yellow is reducible. The problem is that we need to automatically recognize which sentences are grammatical, so it's quite a problem. But if we have a very large corpus, large enough, we can search for the needed sentences. So if I have a sentence in the tree bank, I like yellow bananas, and I want to know whether the word yellow is reducible, I can try to search for the sentence I like bananas, whether it is in the tree bank, it is in the corpus. And if it is there, it's possibly grammatical. Of course, in the corpus can be everything, but it's quite likely that the sentence is grammatical. If it is not in the corpus, we don't know, because majority of sentences are not in our corpus. However, we would like to assign some scores to every part of speech tag, for example, or every segment of part of speech tag, some score which says whether this part of speech tag is reducible or not, or how much it is reducible. And we would like to have, for example, for adjectives and adverbs, we would like to have very high reducibility, because they are reducible, they are leaves in the trees. For verbs, we would like to have very low reducibility. For nouns can somewhere they can be reduced, because they are leaves, somewhere they cannot, if they have some modifiers, for example, adjectives and so on. So, how I compute this reducibility? If I have a part of speech tag or part of speech segments, n-gram of part of speech, for example, preposition noun, the bigram preposition noun. And so I go through the corpus and search for all these bigrams, preposition noun. And for each such occurrence, I remove the respective words, the two words which are preposition and noun, and I check in the corpus whether the rest of the sentence, which remains, is at least one somewhere in the corpus, which means whether it is grammatical or not. And if so, then such sequence of words is reducible. If not, it is not reducible. And I denote RG is the number of all reducible sequences in a corpus, and the CG is count, is number of all sequences. Of course, the RG will be very, very, very little number, because we don't have all the sentences in the corpus. And CG will be very, very quite high number. And the reducibility is computed simply by dividing the number of reducible sequences by the number of all sequences in the corpus. Here, the 1 over n is the normalization. The normalization is something like average reducibility in the corpus of all through all the sequences, probably. And I do some smoothing here because I don't want to have zeros there, because I cannot say that something, if it is not reducible at all in the corpus, has a zero reducibility. I don't know it, so I do the smoothing. And also for some part of speech tags that are not very frequent in the corpus, it's quite high probability that they will not be reduced anywhere in the corpus. So I don't want to have zero probabilities. So, if I compute the reducibility as I described, here is the table of the most frequent onigrams, bigram, bigrams, and trigrams in the PDT. And as a post tag, I use only the first and second position of the PDT tag. And if you see the unigrams, you can see that the highest reducibility has the adverb db, then punctuation adverb dg, adjective I don't know what is it. This is pronoun. Whereas very low reducibility has preposition verb in the past tense verb it's infinitive maybe. So it's quite good result. Also for the bigrams, very reducible is the bigram preposition noun and the bigram preposition adjective, which is also very, very common in a tree bank. This the reducibility is very low. Here it is rounded to zero. Similar for English. The adjectives, adverbs, has very high reducibility, whereas the verb, the particle to, preposition, verb in past tense, is very quite. Of course, there are mistakes here, but we can use it for inducing the dependency trees. So now I will describe my model, which consists of 4 submodels, which are edge model, fertility model, distance model, and subtree model. For simplification, in my experiment, I used only part of speech tags. I don't use fourth forms at all. And I induce only projective trees because it's quite a valuable constraint for inducing the dependency trees, because there are not much non-projectivities in Czech or in whatever language. My generative story is that first I have a root. I will generate the head of the sentence, And after generating every node, I will first generate its fertility, which is the number of its children, number of children which are on the left, and the number of children which are on the right. And then I will generate the individual children. So the fertility will generate the number of children, and the edge model will generate the individual part of speech type of individual nodes. So first I will generate the fertility of a verb. Then I generate first child, which is a noun. I generate fertility of noun is only one to the left, for example. And I generate the determiner. And determiner, the fertility of the determiner is zero. Then I go to the second child of the verb, and this is the adverb, and fertility of adverb is zero. I go next to the preposition, the fertility of preposition is one to the right. I generate a noun, fertility of noun two to the verb. Determiner has the zero fertility, adjective zero fertility, and at the end I generate the first, which has also zero fertility. And by this generative model, I generate the first. It is a little different from the dependency model with violence. So now I will describe individual models. The edge model is simply the probability of tag of the dependent given direction and tag of the parent. Here I use the Chinese restaurant process, which means that if this particular edge is very frequent in the past, it's more likely to be generated again. And beta here are Dirichlet hyperparameter, which is needed there because it's something like smoothing. Or it's if I have generated only the first edge, I have only one edge, and after, if I use this model, I had to generate it again if I don't have here this smoothing. I don't know whether it's clear, but for the fertility model, it's similar. I generate the number of children given the part of speech tag. It's similar. It's a bit more complicated here. I use the prior probability P0, which says that the lower fertilities are more probable than higher fertilities. The fertility, if the fertility of 10, if it's less likely to have to for node to have a fertility of 10 children than only one children. So I use some prior probability, which is set to 1 over 2 to the power of number of children. Or the third model is the distance model. It's very simple. It only says that longer edges are less probable. So it is 1 over the position of parent minus the position of the child, and to the power of gamma. Gamma here is some hyperparameter which is the something like the weight of this model. And epsilon d is only the normalization constant, so that it sum up to 1. And the last model is a subtree model. And subtree model here we use the reducibility feature. So it is the probability of the subtree. The subtree is the node. A subtree of a node I is this node and all its descendants. And it said if the reducibility of this subtree is high, the probability will be also high. So it is, and the delta is the weight, and epsilon is the normalization here. So this is very important model because it introduced the reducibility feature. And by this model, it can be easy learned that adjectives are leaves and verbs are the roots and so on. And we want to further give sampling and further inference of grammar. We want to compute the probability of the whole tree bank. And the probability of whole tree bank is that we simply multiply over all nodes in the tree bank, we multiply all the models. So we go through the all nodes or all words in the tree bank, and this is the probability of fatality of the individual or the particle node given. Yeah, this is the fertility of the node times the probability of edge between this node and its parent. This is the parent and direction times probability of distance between this node and its parent times probability of subtree of this node. So if we have any generated tree bank on our corpus, we can compute the probability using this formula. So now the Gibbs sampling. Gibbs sampling is an iterative approximation algorithm which helps with searching for the most probable solution. So this Gibbs sampling is often used in unsupervised machine learning, and it works as follows. First, if we have a corpus, and first, dependency trees for all the sentences are generated completely randomly, random initialization of the dependency trees. And we can compute the initial probability of the tree bank we have, which is, of course, very low. And then we keep doing small changes in the tree bank. And the small changing is that we pick a node and we randomly change the dependency structure in its neighborhood somehow. It is not the randomly means that it is not uniform, but it is the weighted coin flip. We choose the change by weighted coin flip because the changes that leads to higher probability of the tree bank are more probable than the changes that lead to lower probability. But of course we can decide that we can change it to some non-probable solution. But the changes that leads to higher probability are more probable. I will show it in the next slide. And after more than 200 iterations, iteration is that we go through all the nodes. We do the small change for every node, and after 200 iterations, the dependency trees converge to some shapes. In this case, after 200 iterations. Now I want to describe the small change, how it is made. Because I sample only the projective trees, I will use the different notation for the description of the small change, and I will use the bracketing notation of the projective dependency trees. This is the example. This dependency tree can be written as this bracketing. Each pair of bracket belongs to one node and delimits or its descendants from the rest of the sentence. And each bracketed segment contains just one word that is not embedded deeper, and this is the head of the segment. For example, here we have the bracket DT and N, and N is not in brackets here, so it is the head of these two nodes. And the head of all the sentences is VB, because VB is not in the bracket. So this notation we will use for the description of the small change. And the small change is following. We choose one known non-root node and remove it. We have here, we have the example, and we choose one non-root node. In this example, for example, it will be the VB, which is a verb. And we remove the appropriate bracket. So it is this bracket. And we add another bracket, another pair of brackets, which doesn't violate the projective tree constraints. So we have eight possibilities how to add the new pair of brackets. These are these. In these four possibilities, the verb, the preposition will be the head of the sentence, and in these four possibilities, the verb will be the head of the sentence. So we have these eight possibilities how to make the small change. And we can compute the probability of the whole tree bank for each possibility. These numbers are only example numbers. In fact, the numbers are very, very low because we have quite high. Tree bank is very high and the numbers are very low. And now we choose one of these possibilities by weighted coin flip, which is weighted by these numbers. Of course, normalized. If you normalize this number and toss a coin, not coin, toss a octahedron, weighted octahedron, we choose one of the brackets. We choose this one, which is not the highest, but it's quite probable. So the new brackets will be. In this example, we will choose the same brackets as we removed, but it's okay. We can choose any bracket we want. So this is the small change. And after, for example, 200 iterations, which means 200 times number of words in the corpus, small changes. The tree bank is converged, and what we do with the tree bank? The simplest possibility is just pick the tree bank as it is at the end, and we have the tree bank. But these are problems because the last changes can be not very probable. In some cases, so we can do some averaging of the last, for example, 100 iteration. We can compute the edges, the individual edges in the tree bank for all the 100 iterations, and then use the, for example, maximum spanning tree algorithm to get the average dependency trees. If we use this maximum spanning tree algorithm, we can get non-projective trees, but why not? So this is the end of description of the algorithm, and these are results. So I use the Konolola tree banks from 2006 and 7 test data, and I computed direct attachment scores on it. And I compare the result with results by reported by Spitkovsky 2011, which is possibly state of the art, but we don't know because many papers present the result only for English, which I think it is not very fair because no, not fair. They can be very good the parsers, but if they have good result for English, doesn't mean that they have good result for other languages. So the comparison is with Spitkovsky because he reported the result.
Perhaps before getting to the result, I saw that it was like you presented something like
it is not. Yes. This is a different data because it's Konolola data. And the results reported by it was Spitkovsky, but it was his different paper, and in that paper he reports only the results on English. So in that slide, it was the highest result for English.
Okay, so that's like interpretation. You think this part of parsing could be very different?
Probably. I don't know, because he didn't report the result on all over the languages. This is quite a problem, because if you see the results for different languages, you have one parser which is good for these five languages, you have other configuration which is good for other languages, and for the first languages that is completely bad. So it's quite a problem to evaluate this. So I can compare it with this is the last results on controller data.
I have one question regarding the evaluation. You said something that evaluation changes. Well, there are some errors in it, but it might not be significant. I mean, you don't attach something particular, but still it has meaning. If you realize the score, what is your feeling about the result? Would it be very significant, like 10-30 or something?
Possibly. 10% maybe, 10%, 15% maybe. It depends on language, and it also depends on the, because we use here the part-of-speech tags. There are some papers that don't use part-of-speech tag, but then use the unsupervised part-of-speech tagging or unsupervised word clustering, and the results are also quite very good. And these results depends. On the text that used. If for check I use the fifth position, which is case, the results are much better, because if I use the case, and this is similar for other languages. For example, in German, the auxiliary verbs are differently tagged from finite verbs, and it makes a lot of differences. It depends on the, mainly it depends on the text set. So it's a problem. And on many papers, the results are using the part-of-speech text, supervised part-of-speech text, but I think the last years there were some papers which report results without the part-of-speech text. It's, I mean, completely unsupervised parsing, only from the raw text. Oh, by this table, I would like to say that my results are better than Switkowski. We have 18 languages, and for 13 of them, my results are better. And so it's good. But it's a little bit unfair comparison, because Pitkovsky used only the Connell training data, and I used the larger tree bank, not tree bank, the larger corpus. I used the Wikipedia text for inducing the reducibility. Because for inducing the reducibility, I need very large corpus. And this result, this Pitkovsky result, are not very, are only on training and training data of the Connell tree banks. But I think if we have it, why don't use it? So here are some examples of how looks the output of our check tree. So in this parser, we used only this part of speech text, not on the word forms. And you can see there are mistakes. This is the this poharum is true zemi, evropských zemí should depend on zápas. And Nizozemské in Hilvestromu should depend on maybe also on Zapas.
Did you try to sample from your model, or actually estimate your probability model for parsing and then sample from looking for alpha accuracy?
No.
Because you tell me, maybe the best parsing of random samples is not the best possible. But you look at the distribution of the possible output, you might see actually something that is the correct parse trees are in the top 20 of the example.
Yeah. I didn't do it, sorry. Here's the example for English. So it's here's the badly attached the germinator. I don't know why. I don't know. And yes, this hoping should be reboot should be attached to hoping, I think. And two, we don't know whether two is below the rebuilt or un.
The other thing is the reason because of sampling. And if part of the sample just doesn't like the situation, you can reparse all of them in
your product
model.
Yes.
And you will pick the most likely.
Yes, of course. Maybe, yes, maybe this is the. Yes, the people who use the dependency model invariant, they use variational bias for inducing the grammar, and they induce the model, and then they do the parsing on they can do the parsing on other data, and so maybe it can be better. So that's all. One conclusion that. We have unsupervised parser, which we just we tested on 18 different languages, and we achieved higher attachment score for 13 of them. So, thank you.
Thanks to the speaker. So, questions, please.
What you can do, because probably there are many choices what you can do with when you kind of finish your training and you actually have a tree bank, whether it's averaged or not. But then you can imagine to retrain it on those data by using any type of parser. And what you said last was that some people did it like this, right? Like even the
they use the dependency model of events. They induce the probabilities for the as I show it p for the p attach and p stop, and using these probabilities they parse the tree bank. Because EM you don't get the tree bank. Using EM you don't get the tree bank because you get the probabilities.
Okay, so maybe just a technical question. For the comparison, so I understand that actually. This is not really kind of really one-to-one comparison with the Spitkovsky. Can you re-implement the Spitkovsky and do the same thing on the large data so that he can, so he also uses the Wikipedia data?
No. he don't use it. Yes, yeah, I can do. The problem is that it's quite complicated to implement the inside outside algorithm with all the things they have there.
You can use only data he actually was using, this kind of sort of data he used. So you don't have to implement his world, but it can do the ground standards for that as he.
I understood that for the reducibility, you would be disadvantaged because for small data,
yes,
you can't reduce.
I tried to infer the reducibility score only from the training part of the kernel tree bank, but there are two bigrams reducible, or two words are reducible because it's nothing. I need a large corpus for this.
Maybe you can ask him just to, please rerun it on this data.
Yeah, I can ask him. There will be a challenge. It is a shared task in unsupervised dependency parsing. It is in Montreal with an ACO, and I plan to participate on it. And I will meet there all these people. So.
Could you please explain once again why there are
that reducible segments If you can reduce some segments from the sentence, it's probably it is the subtree, because yes, there are some contra examples, of course, but I don't know. It's quite. It's not clear, or
yeah. Now they just I see. Yeah, thanks.
So I wanted to ask, how much does the reducibility bring you? Like, if you out the reducibility model,
quite a lot. It was without the reducibility, it is something like 29%. With the reducibility, it's 48 or. And there are some languages that are better without the reducibility. Because it depends on the part of speech tech. If my first experiments were very, very easy, and I have switched the probability. I didn't use the probability of child given the parent, but the parent given the child, and I get a very high score for Spanish, and that was because the verbs, the text of verbs were very. There had only a few tags for verbs, so that the tags for verbs were very frequent, and they went to the root, and less frequent words went to the leaves. So that's why the attachment score was very high, because it depends only on the text abused.
And one more question to the reducibility itself. So you said that you search for the whole sentence.
Yes.
Some years ago, when I first read the dependency analysis by reduction paper, I also tried a similar thing, not with the Gibbs sampling, nothing, just trying to find out which words can be treated as leaves and which are more core to the sentence structure. And I used the n-gram language model over forms, assuming that if an n-gram of words is very probable in the language model, then it is probably not reducible, or it is grammatical. So So you have say 4-gram, and you are wondering whether the second word can be dropped or not. So you drop it and check what is the probability of the trigram.
Yes.
And if it's sufficiently high, you say, okay, this is reducible.
Yes, I tried this.
This doesn't work. For me, it didn't.
Mainly in Czech, the problem is with verbs, because you have the free word order, and verb can be almost everywhere in the sentence. So if you have a noun phrase or prepositional phrase, verb, other noun phrase, and you drop the verb, it's very probable, because verb can be everywhere, and
so the model verbs, assumes that you have just not seen this verb in
yes,
the n-gram, so it's
that's why
in the sentence.
That's why I search for the whole sentence, because in the whole sentence the verb must be somewhere.
So do you know the statistics of like the sentence length that are used to confirm? I'm surprised that you learn the trees for arbitrarily long sentences, but not surprised. But that's a great thing that you are able to induce trees even for very long sentences, where I assume that the reducibility was in fact trained on just short sentences because they were easier to find in the corpus.
But from the reducibility. I only measure the reducibility of individual text.
Yeah.
That's all, and I get only this. I
score.
Take only this course to the parser and use only the reducibility of the. I don't use the.
Words. So this is something that you should sell more. That from shorter sentences you are actually able to learn statistics that then apply to longer ones. This is something very very interesting. I feel. And it would be interesting to support this with numbers, like how long the sentences are that you are able to validate, and so on. Yeah. So thanks for the great talk.
I have just a remark to the comparability of the exits that
Have you thought about using universal text set introduced by guys from Google, Petrov and Damian Das? Have you heard about it?
Universal text. I don't heard about it, but in the share task, which will be in an ACLE, there are also some universal tags. Text, about 10 texts or even...
Yes.
Nouns, verbs, adjectives...
Yeah, shared among 20 or 30 languages.
Yes. Maybe these are these texts. Yes.
This would make the maybe results between languages more comparable. Okay. To try whether those text sets are as universal as they claim. So, okay.
Of course, the clear solution of unsupervised parsing should be using the unsupervised tagging, of course, because if you have an unsupervised, if you have a supervised parser, if you can say, yes, these words are verbs, these words are nouns, and nouns will be attached to verbs, and adjectives will be attached to nouns, you will get much higher results, only with this information. Because these completely unsupervised parsers have problems with what is verbs and what are nouns.
From the table, when you have all these languages, I noticed that actually you get worse in for the Romance languages, with the exception of Spanish, where it's kind of the same. So have you looked at why? If there is any feature of these languages which, might...
Yes.
Yeah. So Catalan, Italian, what else? There was one more. No.
Basque is not Romani.
Basque is different.
I try to invest what are the errors in Basque, but I don't understand it at all. I don't know. The texts are completely...
And what about the Catalan? It has so high score in the first case as in no one else.
It depends on the model. When I try to use different models, the scores for Catalan was higher. You change model a bit, you change Feltilde model that you, for example, for the Feltilde model, I can have the probability of all the children given the head, or probability of number of left children and right children given the head, and if I change like this, the scores completely change. So, I think it depends mainly on the text set here, because...
If you run the git sampling many times, at least, for all the languages, do you get... what is the standard deviation?
Yeah, the standard deviation is about... Yes, I don't have it here. I should have it here. It's about 1%.
So the
trees have similar errors across the various runs, or it can also be that you actually learn different part of the grammar better and different part of the grammar worse, because the GIP
sampling... On the same date when I...
On the same data. Or all the GIP sampling is it bound to converge to a global optimum?
No. This particular experiment that seems that it converges to some... It can be global optimum, but I tune this parser only on Czech and English. So after it, I run it on all the languages. So I tuned means that I switched the models and saw the scores. But of course, it. I can.
So the standard deviation is low. That's
yes, it's quite low.
So actually, when we can do this, if you have many, that means that if you have many possible combinations, because you said you tried many models, like, you know, having these fertility separately for left and right, or having them together, including a model, not including a model. But this still seems to me to be a relatively low number of possible combinations, like in the hundreds maybe, but at most, right? So, can you do it? Can you tune it automatically for each language, just running it 100 times and see on some development data how well you do?
Yes.
And then
yes,
you choose different models for different languages?
I can tune it, but I don't know what would be this for, because the task is to be able to parse language for which I don't have the tree bank. And this is something like training on the Go data.
Yes, that's right. I mean, of course, it depends on the application, right? So if you test it in an empty system, you should definitely use the empty system score for saying, you know, which is good for which language. But if you doesn't have any other comparison, now I understand you would like to have an objective function which does not depend on the annotated data, right?
Yes.
And you haven't thought about it, right? You know, which would be the function that would tell you that, you know, for whatever Italian, you should not use one model and just look at the annotated data. Do you think it's possible?
Thank you. get something very similar to Spitkowski. Not similar because he used a different model and different
child or it is the second or
show this model, which I don't have here.
Thank you.
Something.